7:38, joined on the phone now by Congressman Bill Flores from Washington, D.C. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Chase. It's great to be on WTAW News Talk 1620 again.
Glad to have you this morning. Before we talk about what's going on in D.C., let's talk about what's really important and something we neglected to mention last week. How's that new grandchild doing?
Well, I'll tell you what. Britain has captured our hearts, and every day we get a couple of pictures from our son and our daughter-in-law, and we really miss her already.
If I've learned anything, it's that probably the most dangerous place to be is between a grandparent and a grandchild, certainly a baby. So,
well, particularly. You wouldn't want to get between Gina and Britton, for sure.
I understand. Well, congratulations to you and your family. Glad to hear everybody's doing well.
Well, thanks, Chase.
Obviously, we're talking budget. We're talking continuing resolution. Kind of walk us back through, because since we last spoke to you, we have what is being referred to as literally the 11th hour decision to keep the federal government from shutting down. Kind of walk us back through what your world was like the latter part of last week.
Okay, well, unfortunately, last week had a lot more angst for the American people than it should have, and in particular for our troops. We need to remember, we're fighting two different budget battles here at the same time. The first budget battle is to get the United States government funded through the end of September for fiscal 2011. And then the next budget battle is to fund it for 2012 and the next 70 years after that. And so that's the differentiation. What happened is that there seemed to be a fair amount of stalemate between the president and Harry Reid on one side and John Boehner on the other side. And fortunately, we were able to get some breakthroughs about 9 o'clock on Friday night, and then we voted for a little bridge CR to keep the government open until we could get the documentation of this longer term CR, which was filed yesterday. We'll vote on it tomorrow.
The president's going to lay out his plans or his advanced details of his budget today, or what he wants to do with the budget. Anything you're anticipating coming out of that?
My expectation, first of all, I find it's fairly ludicrous that he would do that now, because I was one of the budget committee members that received his official budget on February the 14th, and it was really more of a Valentine's Day massacre for the American people. Now he wants to come out with a new budget when he looked at the budget that the budget committee filed earlier this week. I guess he's wanting a mulligan or some sort of a do-over. What I expect his budget will show is massive tax increases. There has never been a spending program that he has found comfort in cutting, and so the only way that he thinks is appropriate to balance the budget is through some sort of tax increases. The problem with tax increases is you kill the economy, you kill economic growth, you kill jobs, and you hurt the very ones you're trying to help by balancing the budget in the first place.
Speaker Boehner has gone on the record saying that any tax increases are unacceptable and are a non-starter. If you could, though, because of the dire financial situation, kind of walk us through the logic on the Republican side. If people look at a headline and they see somebody that's taking home income in the seven digits every year, and there's not a push to raise taxes on them, what is the justification for that?
Well, here's the justification. The top 5% of our income earners in this country receive about 20% of the pay of the country, but they pay 40% of the taxes of the country. And so anytime you raise the taxes on that element of our workforce or that element of the American people, you reduce their ability to hire additional people. A lot of those people are small businesses, and you're going to hurt net job growth, and you're also going to hurt the investments that they make back in the economy that improve our economic potential as we move forward. You could also look at what it would do on the charitable contribution side, for instance. I mean, to the extent that you ding those people with higher taxes, you hurt the economy as a whole. If you look historically, tax revenue to the United States government has always been about 18.3% of GDP. Whether the taxes are at the marginal tax rate when John Kennedy came in of 91%, or it was 28% after tax reform under Ronald Reagan, we always average 18.3% of GDP. The difference is when you have high marginal tax rates, you have much slower rates of economic growth. When you have lower tax rates, you have higher rates of economic growth. So what I'd rather have is take a smaller piece of a larger pie and produce more net revenue to the United States government, and you balance the budget quicker because you have more economic growth and more people working and paying taxes.
long term with the budget, and as you said, we've got to look ahead to the not just keeping things open right now, but the next fiscal year, and as you said, the next 70 years. Long term, what needs to happen to put things back on more stable financial footing?
Well, the drivers of our debt that are causing our problems today are the entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, even food stamps to some extent are driving this huge increase in deficit spending. So if you want to fix the federal budget, you have to look at those. Now, in the Republican budget that we filed earlier this week from the Budget Committee, we look at everything, all discretionary spending and all entitlement spending. And so we have proposed a fix for Medicare that fixes Medicare, that keeps Medicare today the way it is for folks that are at or near retirement, but then fixes it for folks that are 54 and younger so that they'll have, they can look forward to some sort of a Medicare benefit as well. It fixes Medicaid by block granting that to the states and letting the states deal with something that they inherently know better than do a bunch of bureaucrats here in Washington, D.C. And then we look at food stamps. We've set up triggers so that we can look at Social Security and get it fixed somewhere down the road so that it's solvent for all generations, not just for the people that are currently retired.
Congressman Bill Floor is joining us on the phone this morning from Washington. Congressman, Chairman Ryan's budget is being called dead on arrival in the Senate. If that is the case, then what is the hope of the House Budget Committee in terms of coming to some sort of compromise with Senate Democrats who are still in control as far as a spending plan that the president would not veto, perhaps?
Well, here's the way I would characterize it. Let me talk about what will happen, and then I'll give you a characterization of it. The Senate, the House is supposed to pass a budget first, and the Senate is supposed to take that budget up and then pass their own budget, and then the two budgets come together in conference, and hopefully you come up with a unified congressional budget. In this case, that's unlikely to happen this year. The House will pass our budget on Friday of this week, and then the Senate will come up with their own budget, and they will likely not be reconciled in conference. And so we in the House will deem our budget passed for use of the authorizing committees and the appropriation committee in setting the spending patterns going forward. Now, the Senate, our spending numbers are undoubtedly going to be lower than the Senate. But there's no way the Senate can force us to spend more money than we want to spend. You come back to the least common denominator, and that is who wants to spend the least amount of money. And so my expectation is that the House budget will control one way or the other, whether or not it's agreed to by the Senate.
But then it has to go to the president, and it would seem that talk of veto comes into play at that point.
Yeah, I mean, where it comes into the president doesn't have to sign the budget. What the president will have to do is sign the appropriations bills that are driven, that are restricted by the numbers within the budget. And so he could decide to veto appropriations bills, and then we could be back in the same mess of shutting down the government. That's his prerogative. But the American people sent us here to cut the deficit and to begin a path toward balancing the budget, and the Ryan plan that we authored in the Budget Committee does exactly that.
Congressman Bill Floor is joining us from Washington this morning. Very quickly, Congressman, jumping tracks to something that directly runs down to the state level. You have come out on the record as far as being in favor of giving states more more latitude is the word I'm looking for. More latitude as far as what they do with Medicaid funding. Can you comment on that?
Well, first of all, the governors of and the state legislatures of most of the states in this country have asked for this. What they're tired of is Washington sending them a little bit of money and then telling them how they have to spend that plus their own money. And we heard that message loud and clear. It is one thing that the state legislature and the governor in Texas know better what it's like to take care of their uninsured and underinsured folks in Texas than do the bureaucrats in Washington. And taking care of the people in Texas is a lot different than taking care of the underinsured and uninsured folks in Minnesota, for example. And so what we've decided to do in the budget that will be passed this week is to block grant that to the states and then turn the discretion over to the states as to how they deal with their uninsured and underinsured folks so that they can create the safety net that they think is appropriate for their state rather than a bunch of bureaucrats up here in Washington thinking they know better.
Congressman Bill Flores, we appreciate your time this morning. Anything else on your radar screen you want to talk about?
Well, we have another big thing that we're working on this week, and that is that today the Natural Resources Committee, of which I'm a member, is going to start marking up a new energy bill to begin an aggressive push toward drilling for more oil and gas domestically for a variety of reasons. One is to produce more domestic energy. Number two is to put people back to work, and number three is to have better energy security and lower energy prices domestically than what we have today.
And any hope that that will obviously not going to alleviate anything anytime soon? But what's the long term hope for that? I mean, as far as the reality of it, I guess surviving beyond committee.
Well, I've said this before. First of all, it'll pass the House because we have the majority in the House. In the Senate, I think it's going to have a rockier time, but it's fascinating to see what high gasoline prices do to people that are anti-oil and gas. So my expectation is that once gas prices approach $5 a gallon this summer, that the Senate will be looking everywhere it can to try to find ways to alleviate that, and this bill will be just the ticket to do that.
Especially if the phones are ringing back home and they're in their congressional offices, I would think.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
Congressman Bill Flores, thanks for your time this morning.
Chase, I appreciate it. Remind our listeners to pray for our country and our troops.
That's Congressman Bill Flores joining us from D.C. We chat with him on Wednesdays here on News Talk 1620 WTAW.